All right, so let's move right into our scheduled business meeting items. Item five, which is to consider and take possible action to accept the GASB 68 report from Siegel Consulting. So Gail, I think I'm going to ask you to kick this one off if I've got my notes correct.
Yes.
Thank you.
So in the board materials, you'll find the GASB 68 report, as well as a report from Brown Armstrong, Cicera's external auditor. They did conduct an audit of this report. And we do have Paul Angelo, as well as Andy Young from Siegel Consulting, joining us today to review this report. And with that, I will hand it over to Paul Angelo. And will you be screen sharing or Andy?
I'll be doing the screen share.
Okay. Great.
So good morning, members of the board and President Gordon. Let me hit the share screen here and see how my Zoom skills are working today. Oh, there we go.
There you go.
Seeing the title page of the GASB 68 Actual Evaluation Report. This will be a very brief presentation. I have to only slightly tongue-in-cheek say we have a contest in our office between our different reports that we provide to CSER each year, as to which will be the longest one. And this year, it was a very close contest because the valuation report is 169 pages, whereas the GASB report here, as you can see at the top, is 166 pages. Yes. The difference, and that is, I urge you to read all 169 pages of the actual evaluation report. I urge you to read maybe like 2 pages of the GASB 68 report. The GASB 68 is a very functional report under the accounting reporting rules. The reason it's so long is that it has schedule after schedule after schedule. And for each one, we present a separate schedule for each of your contributing employers. When we were implementing GASB 68, we had a decision to make. Do you put a giant table for each schedule with all the employers, or do you sort of give each employer their own page? And we've gotten a lot of compliments from the accounting community saying they really like the way this is laid out. So we're quite proud of this. It is a ton of numbers. But what it really does is develop for your employers both their liability amounts and, most importantly, their income statement amounts and the reconciliation of the income statement amounts for the year for reporting on the pension plan. You know, if you recall, when we present the funding valuation, we also present what's called the GASB 67 report. That is for the financial statements of this plan, of the plan. It's a much shorter report, but the GASB 68 report goes on and on and on because it really is a separate report for each of your employers.
Which, Paul, which are the 2 pages you recommend we read?
The two I'm going to show you, which are, they tell you generally what the GASB 68 is. And it really, it points out really the big deal here. I'm at the bottom of page 4 now. What it points out in the top of page 5, what it points out is that there is a harmony between financial reporting and funding because of the rules that GASB adopted back in, I guess, 2012. And what they said was, when we're measuring a liability, we're going to measure it the same way that we do for funding, using the so-called entry age cost method. And for the discount rate, unlike corporate plans that use a market rate, GASB decided that for financial reporting, we will use the expected return on plan assets, which again is the same as what we use for funding. So fundamentally, what we say here is that the TPL, total pension liability, is substantially the same as the actuarial accrued liability that we use for funding. And the same is true when you look at the net pension liability. Well, GASB focuses on the market value of assets. And so if you go to your funding report, you will find, even though we measure the employer contribution rates on a smooth asset basis, we publish what the unfunded would be and what the funded ratio would be if you use the market value. And guess what? The unfunded liability for funding on a market value basis is substantially the same as what GASB calls the net pension liability. So there is this harmony. That's where it ends, though. When it comes to the amount of contribution, as you know, we use an amortization period, layered amortization, and we use 5-year smoothing. GASB, in developing the pension expense, does use 5-year smoothing. It's kind of hidden away, but it's in there. but they use a very short amortization period. And as a result, the pension expense number for GASB, which is what a lot of these pages are about, is very volatile because the amortization period is really down around 5 years. And there have even, I've seen papers by the rating agencies that actually come out and say, you know, the pension expense number under the GASB rules is really just not a useful number because it's so volatile from year to year. Nevertheless, you have to publish it. But even the rating agency says you really want to look at, you want to look at funding to see how the pension plan will impact the year-by-year resources of your employers. So then, other than that, I mean, there are summaries here, and you can compare the two. But really, once you get a sense of what the purpose of the GASB 68 report is, I don't know that the details are decision useful or even that informative to the trustees. Whereas in contrast, as you know, we think there are any number of schedules in your valuation report that provide you very helpful information in understanding how the funding works. So I don't mean to dismiss this. It's an essential thing that we provide to your employers. They need it for their financial reporting, but we don't think it provides decision useful information as the way the funding valuation does. Now, Andy, is there anything else you think we should toss in here on GASB 68 before I throw this to the chair?
Yeah, maybe just a little bit on page 9 to show the trustees how different the results are actually from the funding valuation report. Because using the concept that Paul has already very well laid out, the net pension liability, so this is the fourth line from the top, is really accounting speak for unfunded actuarial accrued liability. As Paul has indicated, this was calculated based on market value. I know that the accountants like to refer to that as fair value, and technically the right term is planned fiduciary net position is a mouthful, but that's the right term. So it's determined on the market value basis. As Paul has indicated, we already have that number in our funding valuation report that the board approved back in August. However, in this valuation, what we have done is to apply the so-called roll forward. So rather than to wait until the 12/31/2020 valuation data is fully reconciled and agreed to, we actually roll forward the liability based on the data as of December 31st, 2019. So for some years, there could definitely be some differences. But if you look at this $461 million number versus what we have in the funding valuation report, they are really only different by less than $5 million. So coincidentally, the two numbers are very close to each other. To add to the other point that Paul has already raised, which is how volatile the pension expense is, you can see that last year, 12 months ago, the fiscal year number was $278 million on this page, the fifth line. But this year, because we have a very good investment year for 2020, and plus we finished accounting for the expense from the poor investment return from 2015, as a result, the pension expense is only about one third of what it used to be just 1 year ago. But whereas if you look at the actuarially determined contribution, that's the number that goes through the actuarial smoothing, the 18-year amortization and whatnot, that number is definitely a lot smoother. So two take-home points is the net pension liability tends to follow very closely the UAAL determined on market value basis, but not, there could be some differences, but this year they happen to be almost identical. Pension expense, definitely a very volatile number, as Paul has indicated. In this case, for the employer anyway, for the financial statement, we are only asking or only requesting the employer book a number, which is only one third of what it used to be only about a year ago.
Thank you. Well, thank you. That's great. And so, Chair Gordon, I guess I'm going to say three pages you should look at. So let's be sure to take a look here at page 9 as well. Really a good example of this pension expense number. So, hey, employer, how much does your plan cost year by year? Oh, I don't know. Somewhere between $278 million and $95 million. Now, to have that kind of a swing in a one-year number is really a criticism. And when we talked to GASB way back in the day, in the 2012 ramp-up to these new rules, we told them that this is just not a useful number, you know, for providing a stable measure. And they said, we're not in the stability business. We are basically in the snapshot business. And so if from 1 year to the next, your net pension liability drops by a third, drops almost by half, then you're going to see similar volatility. And they said basically volatility management is a funding issue. We, the GASB, are not in the funding business anymore. So actuaries, you go advise them on how to get a more stable measure for funding, but we're going to show them as basically a market value roller coaster mode.
But well, the other aspect of this is that, you know, GASB's in the disclosure business. I mean, to me, the primary benefit of this isn't as a decision tool at all. I think we all probably feel that way. It's that this is yet another facet of disclosure for agencies. I represent a number of public agencies who have sat through many of their GASB disclosures, and I'm always interested in the public reaction to it because it's just another way to daylight some of the public's business. To provide, you know, another avenue, another ray of light in, because this, in at least in my estimation, in many prior decades, has been a bit of a mystery to most. So the more daylight, the better. I, you know, to the extent the numbers are confusing or maybe would disorient a reader, understood. But in the general scheme of things, more is better in terms of having information that the public can at least get a peek behind the curtain. Anyway, that's my view on the GASB rules.
But agreed, Mr. Chairman. But what we find, at least the measure of liability is consistent. And once we got that from GASB, we tend to agree with you. It's another way, slightly different lens, more of a snapshot, right? Than an ongoing panorama, if you will. At least we're measuring stuff the same way. We're recognizing it differently over time, but we're measuring it the same way.
Yeah. Excellent. Got it. Any
That's
questions?
All we have for today, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Any questions for Paul or Andy from any of the trustees? My gallery view is a little truncated here, so let me make sure I got.
I can take the sharing down if that helps.
Sure. That way.
Unless there are questions on the document. Let me keep it up in case there's a question on the document.
Hey, Paul. Quick question. How do you come up with on the salary increases? You got 15. How'd you get to the 15.25 and the 16.25%? How'd you get that high on a salary increase? I don't think I've ever seen a salary increase that high.
Yeah. You know, I almost wish that we printed these flipped, that it said 15.25 going down to 375. Mr. Kroll, when you look at, and these are the same assumptions we use for funding. When you look at our salary assumption, it's made of an inflation component, which is the 275. It's made of an across-the-board component, which I think is about 50 basis points. But then we have what's called the merit and promotion increases. And these vary as a person goes through their career. So that 15.25 and that 16.25, that's only in the first year of employment. And then it goes down rather rapidly till it gets to an ultimate rate. And I think it's after about 10 years, Andy, you can check me on that, when it gets to the ultimate increase of 4.25 and 375. But it's really service-driven, Mr. Kroll. And it's just in those first years of employment, people are still advancing in grade. And it's data-driven. You know, if you go to your experience study report, you'll see a graph that shows the actual increases by years of service, and they really do follow this pattern, but it's just for those very early years of service, Mr. Cole.
Okay, great, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Jerry Holcomb, did you have a comment or a question?
Nope, changed my mind, thank you.
Got it, thank you. Anybody else for Paul or Andy? All right, seeing none, let's bring it back. Before us is whether to take an action to accept the GASB 68 report. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second to approve the GASB 68 report. Let's take a roll call. Anderson.
Aye.
Shabadarev.
Aye.
Finley.
Aye.
Gordon.
Aye.
Holcomb.
Aye.
Kroll.
Aye.
McDonald?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
And Watts?
Aye.
Motion carries 9-0 to accept the GASB 68 report. Paul and Andy, thank you as always for your insights and reading tips.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, we'll be hanging around here for the next time, and I'll just turn my camera off, but Andy and I will be staying on the call for the next item.
Yes, thank you. I did have a note to that effect that you would be remaining with us, so thank you.